97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back, Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Normally, we'd be wrapping up at this point, but we've got an hour of power left. Dylan McKinnon is producing, so let's get right to the phones. Lance in Arizona leads things off. What's going on, Lance?
Hey, yeah, so a couple of things. With the Sixers, if Ben Simmons plays that aggressively every single night, especially in the playoffs, they're going to be really hard to beat. And he didn't think twice about it when he was shooting some of those shots, like that fadeaway. Sometimes he thinks about it, like passing it out or shooting it. He just did it and he made it. Dude, he looks like if he's not thinking and he's just shooting, he's going to be fine. And if he's going to be that aggressive, they're going to be really hard to beat.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've always talked about the aggression that he needs to show, right, Lance? And that was something that was on display against a team that in the past has done a pretty good job of finding ways to shut him down. So that was really encouraging to see.
Yeah, exactly. And then my other things that I actually called about was the Phillies and the Eagles. But with the Phillies, that was the best hire they could have made out of all the candidates that were out there. However, they better go out and get some pitching, because they're not winning anything even with him if their pitching is this bad.
Agreed.
And, like, the division's showing you why if you can get into the playoffs and you have pitching, you can win. And then with the Eagles, so two things. One, we talked about it a couple weeks back when Robbie Anderson, I said that was the guy that they should look at, because they looked at him last year, and I don't think the Jets were going to keep him because he's probably going to ask for more money than they want to pay, and Joe Douglas wants to build a lineup. If I'm the Eagles, I call the Jets, and I say, we'll trade you. Not only will we give you a pick, like a third or fourth, I will give you Vitae, who's not going to be here next year anyways, but he's going to protect your quarterback who's getting killed right now. And Joe Douglas was here during that process when he was drafted, so he has pretty good background. And second, like when I talked to you and D the other time, I said to rebuild the defense, this is the thing. You don't need to hit every single pick to rebuild the defense. You just need four or five guys you hit. Have two or three guys here, like a Barnett and a Sweat, and then you fill in two or three other pieces over the next two free agency class. Because you have $40 million next year, and then the year after, you have potentially $100 million to work with in free agency to build that defense. You can rebuild it in 2 years. It's not going to take you 4 or 5 years. You just have to actually hit on the picks. You can't hit one pick, and then next year hit one pick, and then next year hit one. You have to actually hit two or three guys in each draft.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's the thing, right, Lance, is that you don't need to see these guys do home run drafts where, you know, it's the Steelers drafts in the 70s or whatever, but it's just they've been so rough at even finding, like you said, one and a half contributors in every draft, especially defensively, that I don't blame people who don't have faith that they can do it now.
Well, you don't have to have faith that they're going to do it, but you have to do it. That's the only way you're going to build a consistent winner. Free agency, it eventually catches up to you because guys get older faster, because they're usually around 27, 28, 29 when they get to free agency, so you're going to have that issue. See, and the thing with the Eagles is, I'm fine if they're going to make trades for younger players
right. That
are going to be here long term. Like, Robbie Anderson's 26, so if you get him, you extend him, he's here for the next 4 or 5 years, so that's a good trade for you, not just for this year, but for next year. But if you're going to get a guy like a Chris Harris, and you're giving up a third, or it has to go higher because the market seems to be hot on that, why are you doing that on a team that, frankly, if you get to the end of the season, I don't think they're going to beat the Saints. The Saints right now are killing people with their backup quarterback, and Drew Brees is a better quarterback. So I don't think you're going to go out and beat them. So you're going to give up picks, like a high pick, to do what? Try to win a division that, frankly, I'm not sure you're going to win the division anyways, because I don't think one cornerback's going to make the difference.
Well, and that's always the question. Lance, good stuff as always, man. Thanks for the phone call. And that kind of lends itself to the point that Lance was making earlier, and you know, obviously in calls past, about rebuilding the defense and how it's kind of an off-season situation. You can't really do everything that you'd want to do to fix the defense in one fell swoop when, you know, you don't have an off-season to work with. You're trying to do it in the middle of the season while you're also trying to compete and you're trying to do a bunch of other things. Eagles are in between a rock and a hard place right now. There's no question about that. They're a team that has not looked good. Their best players have not been playing otherworldly football, and they haven't had role players or supporting cast people step up much at all. So they're stuck a little bit at this point. They might just kind of be who they are until they start to shore things up draft-wise. Mark in LA is next on the Fanatic. Hey, Mark. Mark.
Yo, what's going on, man?
Hey, man, how you doing?
Hey, not bad. Just cruising on the 405. But wanted to touch base, man. I was watching the Sixers game last night. Got me pretty fired up with Ben Simmons. I mean, last caller hit on it, but he's driving the score. And he's, you know, last year he was getting caught up in the air trying to make cute passes underneath the rim and all that. But I'm fired up with that. And also with the NBA this year, just watching. I watched the Lakers the other night, Dwight and AD on the floor at the same time. Last night you got Joel, you got Hassan Whiteside, and then you got Zach Collins on the floor. I think, you know, that small ball Warriors, I think that's going away. And it's good to see the bigs back. And I was nervous with Al out on the perimeter. But, you know, last night you looked pretty damn good. So, you know, I'm fired up. And, you know, go Sixers, go Birds. And that Girardi hire was pretty good itself. So, Joe, have a great night. And, you know, keep repping Philly. See you, man.
You got it, man. You too. Appreciate it, Mark. Thanks. That's cruising on the 405. Not easy to do, even this time of day. So, good on you. But the thing about Al Horford, he has a couple of distinct advantages over most people that play his position at his size, right? One, he moves still really, really well for a guy of that size. The second thing is that he has developed a softer outside touch, career 38% shooter from deep. So that's not anything that's going to be winning any shooting contest, but certainly a respectable, legitimate threat to hit from the outside. And then the other thing is that he's just such a smart player. Like, he has the ability to analyze angles and know how teams are going to try to attack him and things like that. And he gave Joel Embiid fits, so I'm thrilled to see him deployed this way. Now, with respect to small ball kind of going the way of the past, I don't know about that, but I do know that the Sixers have the ability in the short term to take advantage of this kind of bully ball situation that they've been talking about, because teams have been gearing up and mentally preparing personnel-wise, making acquisitions to stop small ball, not to defend teams that look like the Sixers. So very excited about what the Sixers can do this season. Beyond this season, who knows? But it seems like things are set up well for the team to have a fairly reasonable level of success. We'll put it that way. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. You can reach out on Twitter as well, at Joe Torti, at 97.5 The Fanatic, with your takeaways from the first game against Boston. What the Eagles should do here, are there issues possible to fix during the season, or is this a multiple off-season kind of situation and scenario? And then, of course, your take on the Phillies manager, Joe Girardi, who will be announced on Monday. Frankie in Roxborough is next on the Fanatic. Hey, Frankie.
Yeah, Joe, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for making it.
Yeah, since we're talking about draft picks and everything, the Eagles, I think they made a lot of mistakes on draft picks. Because I was watching the game tonight, Washington and Minnesota, right? They have got, like, third-round draft choices and fourth-round choices that are contributing. Now, that guy that's on Washington, he's a speed guy. I forget his name. Number 17?
The guy in Washington? Oh, my gosh. It's the guy who toasted
he's a
Philadelphia.
Speed.
Oh, my God. The Ohio State kid. I'll remember it. Go ahead.
We passed him up over Ortega Whiteside, and we got Sharif Miller. We got all these picks that
could have been
get on the field.
Yeah, you're well. The problem is, Frankie, that right, and this is what I've talked about with people who don't want to trade picks. I'm like, the Eagles haven't done anything with them to begin with. Like you said, Terry McLaurin's just sitting there, right? Like you could get him. I think that Ortega Whiteside could still be a player down the road, but at this point, I don't have any faith in their evaluation abilities to the point where I value draft picks that much.
Yeah, and we don't have any speed other than DeSean Jackson, and he can't get on the field. And it's just ironic the way we've been drafting. I just can't understand it. And even Minnesota had a couple rookie wide receivers playing today, and they were making some good catches. They were contributing. We don't have any rookies that are even our top round picks, you know, aren't contributing. Like Burnett is to me a disappointment. I mean, I expected a lot more out of him.
I think that's fair to say.
You're totally right about a 6-round draft pick to get Michael Bennett back. I would have did that in a minute.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know why they didn't, Frankie. Hey, thanks for the phone call. Appreciate you calling. And I've said that before where I don't value... Let me put it this way, right? If I'm San Francisco, it's going to take a lot for me to part with any of my draft picks because my draft picks are gold. San Francisco smokes the draft every single year, and they're starting to reap the benefits from it now, right? Defensively, they just make great decision after great decision when it comes to evaluating players. The Mitchell Trubisky trade, for the life of me, is still just the most insane draft heist I've ever seen in my entire life. When it was happening live, I said it didn't make any sense, and it still doesn't.
Not good.
Not for the Bears, no. But when it comes to the Eagles, I can't do it again. We've done it multiple times. If you want a full-on exercise in pain, look at the 2017 draft as a whole, and then look at who the Eagles came away with. Can't do it again. We've done it on the air multiple times. I don't want the show to get stale. But that is a perfect example of literally being able to make an alphabetical order list of players at each position and throw a dart, and you'd have a way better chance than the Eagles did in their draft. I'm sorry, the Eagles' draft picks aren't worth as much, and it's not because of where they'd be picking or anything like that. It's because of what they do with them. You know, it's like people who train in martial arts, right? Some martial artists are so good that they'll be competing with a training partner and they'll be like, here you go, take a kendo stick, take a sword, because it doesn't matter. What are you going to do with it relative to what I'm doing? And the Eagles draft picks are not worth that much in the hands of the Eagles. They're really not.
Is it all drafting, though? Or is some of it development?
Well, that's the question, right? Because I think half of it is you have to find the guys who are actually going to develop and turn into things. For example, like I haven't seen a ton, and I'm sure that there are one or two examples, of Eagles who didn't work out, who then went somewhere else and had crazy levels of success. One that sticks out to me is Kurt Coleman. Like, it seems like Kurt Coleman was really misused here in Philadelphia, goes to Carolina, has a career renaissance, but that doesn't happen all the time. So I think you're right, Dylan. It's a worthwhile question to ask. Like this, the Pittsburgh Steelers, for example, Juju Smith-Schuster is not thought of as the best wide receiver in that class, but an interesting guy in terms of his potential. Steelers have the ability to develop wide receivers better than anybody in the league, and lo and behold, you saw another budding superstar. Versus the Eagles, who investing first-round picks in guys like Nelson Agholor and second-round picks in J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, whom I'm not giving up on yet, by the way. I think that he could end up being a big-time contributing piece. But Eagles just have thrown good money after bad over and over and over again trying to figure out wide receivers. And it's unbelievably frustrating to watch teams across the league win Super Bowls with whatever a Chris Hogan is, and then the Eagles are spending first-round picks and not being able to figure it out. Really frustrating.
And what gets me is sometimes after these drafts, like the national guys will think, oh, this is a pretty good draft for the Eagles. People like the J.J. Arcega-Whiteside draft. Yep. People like the Nelson Agholor draft at the time. I mean, there's a rare thing where people say, oh, that was a bad pick, like Marcus Smith. But a lot of these times you come out of the draft and people think, oh, that was a good pick by them. Eagles had a decent draft, and then falls flat.
Yeah, when you look at it, the teams that win the offseason so rarely do win the regular season. The Eagles have found themselves in that former category a lot, and that latter category once. The one that lost this year was the Cleveland Browns. Everybody and their mother is telling you about the Cleveland Browns going to the Super Bowl. That team still stinks. It's a team made up of a bunch of losers, and they're going to continue to lose. I don't want to be the team that wins the offseason again. And development's going to be a part of that. Identification's a part of that. But that's why I'm looking at Minkah Fitzpatrick. I'm looking at Jalen Ramsey. I'm looking at guys who are on the younger side and saying, look, the draft picks, they're good. But if somebody else has already done the evaluating and this guy's proven that he can play in the NFL, first-round pick could end up being Sidney Jones. Doesn't work. Alex in Queens is next on 97.5 The Fanatic. Good evening, Alex.
Hey, you know, before we talk about holes and needing certain parts of the team not looking good and lacking speed, I want to remind everyone, this is a team that, let's be honest, if Jordan Howard and Miles Sanders were on the team last year and Brandon Brooks didn't go down, there is a really good chance that they win that Saints game because they had no running game that game.
Mm-hmm.
Brooks was a major, but why am I bringing that up? You're talking about that team, the Saints, were a bad call away from probably winning the Super Bowl last year because
sure.
they were one of the best. And the Rams made it to the Super Bowl. Yet the Eagles, not only did they beat the Rams, but they were driving with an opportunity, and it was only second down when the ball went through Jeffrey's hand. They were driving down the field. So it wasn't like, okay, this was at the, they started at the 20 and it's third down. No, they were picking up yards. So it wasn't like, man, they weren't going to come that, you know, come back versus the Saints. My point is, this team with Nick Foles beat the Rams, and they were potentially a few plays away from being the Saints in the same stadium to, at the very least, being to an NFC Championship game. And that's with practice squad players. That's with a roster who, the first 11 games with Wentz, we heard how bad the secondary is and how they have no running game and there's so many holes all over the team.
Mm-hmm.
That same team was a drop pass away from maybe getting back to another Super Bowl. So my point is, when you don't play well, you look slow, you look old. But this was a roster that was touted as, according to Pro Football Focus, the best O-line in football, the best wide receiving core in football.
Yep.
So what's changed? They're underachieving, and it goes back to the quarterback. When you don't like a player, whether it's not necessarily giving up on purpose, but your heart is not with that player, or you don't feel like he's the right guy for your team, you're just not going to get the most out of you as a player. It can be a lack of focus. Maybe you give 80% during the game, but those plays, whether it's drop passes or missed tackles, all those things can happen in one or two games. But when it consistently happens, that's not an accident.
So you're saying missed tackles are Carson Wentz's fault?
What I'm saying is you either have talent or you don't. There's a reason you're missing tackles. You can say, well, you're not a good enough player, or you're missing assignments, or you're not focused. When you drop passes, everyone has human error. Everyone drops the pass. Everyone throws an interception.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Brady throws an interception. But when you're a bad player, it's because you're consistently doing it. But we know they're not bad players because these receivers won a Super Bowl with Nick Foles. And remember, last year they were 5-6 and were a drive away from maybe getting to an NFC Championship game and potentially a Super Bowl. So my point is, it's not a talent thing, it's a chemistry thing. And when you add up 3 out of 4 losing seasons, 7-19 versus teams over 500, never played a single playoff game, it all goes back to Howie Roseman making the worst decision in Eagles history, getting rid of a Super Bowl MVP who saved your season the next year, who's never had a losing season as an Eagle in his 4 years as an Eagle, for a guy who is not liked in the locker room. And you can show me 6 or 7 players that like him. You can take any team.
Foles has never lasted a 16-game season, Alex. He's never lasted one, including this year.
He's not lasted a season, but I'll take the guy that's proven he can win over a guy who's also very injury-prone, who doesn't win at all big games. And the reality is, you can take a coach that a team quits on him. Yeah, you're always going to have 5 or 6 guys that defend that coach, but most of that locker room quit on that coach. So the same thing with Wentz. I'm sure there are guys in that locker room that like him, but I believe there are many guys that don't like him, or at the very least feel like he's not the right guy for the team. So it's not necessarily I dislike you. I feel like you're not the right guy. I'd rather play with Nick Foles, and that makes a big difference.
Well, he's not coming back, Alex, so what do they do?
What I would do is, and I know this sounds crazy, but the way things are going, I would put in Josh McCown. Not that McCown has more talent or he would put up better
stats. Alex, I'm sorry, man. I can't. I've got to operate within the realm of reality. And that's why I tried to give you a chance. But if you're telling me that you start Josh McCown instead of Carson Wentz, who, by the way, has been an unreal disappointment to me personally, not because he's played badly, but because I think Carson Wentz is playing normally for him. And I thought that his normal was going to be the 2017 MVP level situation. Last year, I completely wrote off because he's coming off the back injury in the ACL. I think this is what normal Carson Wentz looks like, which is to say what a lot of quarterbacks look like. If you have the right support system around him, he'll look really, really, really good. And if you don't have the right support system around him, you can tell that he's got talent, and then the team doesn't succeed. I would disagree with a lot of things. I would say that Nelson Agholor is a bad player. Nelson Agholor wouldn't be on my team if I were making the decisions. You've got all kinds of different factors that are playing. For example, I don't know how well Carson Wentz is liked in the room or not. Like, I don't know enough about that situation. I would bet that Alex is probably right, that there are players who like him and players who dislike him. They're professionals. When Carson Wentz is a talented player, you don't just throw your hands up and say, oh, well, you know, I don't know what to tell you. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside isn't catching the ball for him. Like, that's not how that works. If you have guys that are not buying in to your franchise quarterback, you find new guys. That's the way that that works. And just look at New England. That was a perfect example, right? Every single thing that you could point to from a contract standpoint, from a league standpoint, says, yeah, Tom Brady's getting up there. It's probably time for Jimmy Garoppolo to take over. And then it's Brady and Robert Kraft versus Bill Belichick in the feud over Jimmy Garoppolo. And Jimmy Garoppolo gets sent packing. Bill Belichick loses the power struggle to Tom Brady and Robert Kraft. I'm sure that there were people that were thinking, yeah, you know what? Tom's probably closer to the end of his career than the beginning. We want to see what the kid has. He's looked pretty good. Nope. Send him off. I'm sorry. Alshon Jeffrey, just as an example, I'm not saying this. Everybody's saying that now, that he's the snitch. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense when you look at his targets, but whatever. If Alshon Jeffrey doesn't like Carson Wentz, I don't care. Alshon Jeffrey's closer to the end of his career than the beginning. He looks slow this year. He looked really slow last year, and he dropped the ball in the biggest game. People make mistakes, human error, whatever, but you're not going to be throwing stones at this guy, Carson Wentz, who, by the way, if two guys, Nelson Agholor and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, catch passes instead of dropping them, it's a completely different season. We're having a completely different conversation. I am not a blind Carson Wentz defender. I've never been that. But he is moderately far down the list of issues that you have. Number one is that your secondary can't cover anyone. Do you think that Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen had the days that they did for Minnesota because the defensive backs are like, you know what? Carson's just like not doing it for me. Like, do you think that that's what happened, or are those guys not good enough? Do you think Malcolm Jenkins coming out and saying the things that he's been saying, you know, he's not playing well because he's disgruntled or because he's another year older? He looked like he was slipping near the end of last year. He slipped further this year, and he's not the Pro Bowl level player that he was in the past. Like, I know that it's convenient for a lot of people to look at Nick Foles like he didn't stink up the joint in the first half of that Saints game, you know, which nobody seems to remember, or that tried as hard as he could to lose the Atlanta Falcons game. And if Keanu Neal doesn't punt the ball to Torrey Smith, oh, things happen. Yeah, that play happens all the time. It goes off of a defensive back's knee directly to the wide receiver. That play happens all the time. It's such a convenient narrative that people try to bring up, and that actually is not rooted based in fact. Like I said, I've got to operate here from a basis of reality. 610-632-0975. Dylan McKinnon is producing. It is the Joe Torty Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back. Joe Torty here with you, 97.5 The Fanatic. Dylan McKinnon is producing. The Folesian Society is strong. And I feel like it will, it'll never end. I feel like it'll just literally be constant. One of the things that I said is, you know, you can't use the health argument for Foles because he's never had a 16-game season and, you know, Wentz has. People were saying you should have Nick Foles. I'm like, don't you know he got hurt the first game? Like, literally, the first game, the first drive. He's out for 10 weeks or whatever it is.
Any chance he's ever had to be a starter, he got hurt.
Yeah.
He got hurt his first year of the Eagles, missed the last game.
Yep.
Got hurt the second year of concussion, missed two games that they both lost. Got hurt the third year, missed the last eight games.
Traded to the Rams, gets beaten out by Case Keenum. In a job that you legitimately, they traded for you. You legitimately had a chance to win and you lost to Case Keenum. I'm sorry. I know that the Jeff Fisher era is a painful time for a lot of people in the NFL. I get that. Bill in Havertown's next on the Fanatic. Hey, Bill.
Hey, Joe. How's it going?
Awesome. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
Good.
So I'm not saying we should trade for Foles or anything, but what is the explanation? I mean, Foles comes in, obviously, when Super Bowl looks amazing. Last year, offense doesn't look great. Foles come in, they turn it around. I'm looking for answers at this point. I don't understand.
Are there any other, what you'd say, are there any other common threads to when the offense looks really good to when it looks really bad, besides just Nick Foles?
I just think when Foles came in, I think they simplified things.
Well, I think that's certainly true. I think that you're absolutely right about that, Bill. But what I would say is that the Doug Peterson offense requires a deep threat, right? Torrey Smith is in. The offense looks good all year, regardless of whether it's Carson Wentz or Nick Foles in. Last year, you saw Mike Wallace go out, and the offense didn't look particularly good with either quarterback, even though Nick Foles and the Eagles were winning games by the end of the year. And then this year, DeSean Jackson is playing against Washington. Offense looks really, really good. And then he goes down, and then things aren't going as well offensively. So I would say that just the presence of a deep threat is one of the biggest things that kind of determines whether the Eagles' offense has success or not. Would you agree?
I would agree. Not something I totally factored in. Another question that I have, Frank Reich, was he the man behind the curtain? Was he the one running the show? Because, I mean, the Colts look great. That's just something I also have been very, very curious about this year. Curious about your thoughts.
Well, if I'm using my detective skills, Bill, I look at the scripted plays, which are what he was in charge of. And when he was here, they were really, really good. And now that he's not here, they stink out loud. So I think the Frank Reich definitely was a big-time guy, not only in that role, but also in quarterback development, in offensive philosophy and game plan. I think that his absence is a big one. I think that it really is a big one.
All right, thanks, Joe. Have a good night.
You too, Bill. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. I mean, look, and by the way, I'm willing to accept the fact that, and the possibility that Nick Foles, after the Dallas game, which was a disaster, and what was the game before that? Oakland, where he didn't look that good? And then they really dialed things into what he wanted to do and what his strengths were and things like that. That's good coaching. That's John DeFilippo. That's Frank Reich. That's Doug Peterson developing a game plan, saying, hey, this Carson Wentz stuff's not going to work for Nick. We got to find a way to execute things better and scheme things up that will work for Nick. I'm willing to accept that 100% because that's what coaches are supposed to do. In my humble opinion, people who talk about system quarterbacks negatively, I think that that's ridiculous. I think that every quarterback is a system quarterback. Tom Brady's a system quarterback. Aaron Rodgers is a system quarterback. There are lots of quarterbacks that could succeed in multiple systems. Don't get me wrong. That's 100% true. But every quarterback works within the fabric of a system. No one's just drawing stuff up and saying, all right, well, just go ahead and do whatever you feel like doing. There's always a system in it. Now, the difference is that Tom Brady, I feel like, could succeed in a lot of systems. He's in the best one. Like, I don't think that he is as successful, for example, if he's running Green Bay's system. I don't think that he looks as good if he's running Doug Peterson's system, actually. Like, the Andy Reid offense and the Josh McDaniels offense don't have a whole lot in common. One of the most unique offenses that exists right now is the Los Angeles Chargers offense. I feel like a lot of people could not run that offense because of the things that they do. So, I mean, I think that Nick Foles operating in a system that plays to his strengths is just what you should be doing. It's not like a sign of weakness or whatever that they created something just for Nick Foles. It's what you should be doing if you're a coach. You should be putting your players in positions to succeed. If you're Brett Brown and you're drawing up a million plays for Ben Simmons to shoot threes, you're not maximizing your team's talent. He's not the one who should be getting those shots yet. I'm hopeful. Mike and Delco's next on the Fanatic. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Joe. What's up? I just have a quick rebuttal to all these people calling in about Nick Foles.
Okay.
I think everyone loves him. Everyone can say that. He's the man. But question, the Falcons game and the Lions game, if Nick Foles throws that ball, do they catch it?
Right. Yeah. Well, that's the premise. They're saying that they play for Nick Foles and they don't for Carson Wentz. That's
so that ball's in the air and they go, oh, wait, who threw this? So I'm going to drop this one because it's not Nick Foles behind there.
That's
the
premise.
That's just absolutely ridiculous. This defense is atrocious this year. And those two catches are made, you're 5-2 with that defense. I mean, I don't know what these people are watching. The ceiling for Carson Wentz is extraordinarily higher than Nick Foles, which is why you paid the guy, because you have to invest in the ceiling of what he can be. And that's just a good business decision. Yeah, you saw what Foles can do. I get it. But like you said, it's a system that's, you know, a deep threat. Carson Wentz is supposed to be the guy you can rely on when you don't have that stuff. And right now, I think his biggest weakness is the defense that, I mean, we can't stop anything. He's constantly playing from behind. The Cowboys game, you fumble within three plays, and then you get the ball back and you fumble again. You're down 14-0 within 3 minutes.
Chasing it. Yeah, you're right about that. Now, by the way, independent of that, he didn't have a great game otherwise against Dallas. But to say that he's the reason that they are where they are, I just don't think is accurate.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
I think you plug Nick Foles into that game. You really think you're going to win that? I mean, I just don't understand that concept.
No.
It boggles my mind.
No, and Mike, I'm with you. Thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it, man. And I think that most people don't feel that way. I feel like it's a vocal minority that just longs for the days of Foles. By the way, those are the same people that are probably saying you have to get DeSean Jackson and not any other deep threat. It has to be DeSean Jackson because, you know, people like nostalgia. Dylan McKinnon pointing out, doing some research, last year in seven games with Foles, the Eagles scored less than 23 times. Nate Sudfeld didn't start any games last year, right? So Wentz had the other nine. Is that right? So with Wentz, they scored under 22 out of 9 times. Did I get all that right?
Well, those also included the two playoff games, and I don't know if you were...
Okay, gotcha. Two playoff games, too.
But right. The offense, I mean, with... The offense with Foles looked great against the Texans and against the Rams, but in every other game with Foles, they looked kind of mediocre. So, I'm just...
Stats are stats. Yeah. I get it. I get it 100%. Now, there's not going to be winning arguments with some people, right? Because some people call wins a quarterback stat. People don't care about what you... For example, if you ask people who played a better game... In the Eagles Super Bowl, Foles or Brady, people would say Foles. Tom Brady played objectively a better game. Like, absolutely. People are like, Foles outdueled Tom Brady. It's like, no, he didn't. That's not accurate. But Foles won the game.
Foles was great. Brady was better.
Except at catching the ball. Foles was 1,000% better at catching the ball than Tom Brady was at catching the ball. But it doesn't matter. So sometimes you'll move the goalposts, and it's okay. Like, if you're the winning quarterback, people look at Joe Montana. Was he, like, a better thrower of the football than Johnny Unitas? Probably not a better thrower of the football than Johnny Unitas. But very few people would put Unitas ahead of Montana because of the Super Bowl rings and how much winning that guy did. So, I mean, we're never...
Troy Aikman?
Right. Yeah, Troy Aikman. The perfect example. Is Troy Aikman a better quarterback than Dan Marino? I don't think that very many people would say that. But in some people's pantheons, like, hey, man, rings are rings. And that's the way that some people do look at it. That's why it's sports. That's why it's fun. Different things count for different people. But for some people, Foles is going to be the only... he's going to be the be-all, end-all. And some people do anything to make that happen. I'm not saying, by the way, that every Nick Foles fan is... ridiculous, because we're all Nick Foles fans. Like, you know, you don't win the Super Bowl without Nick Foles. I'm not saying that. There are very few defensible reasons, though, why you'd say that Foles should still be the quarterback here and Wentz should be somewhere else. Mike on the cells next on the Fanatic. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Joe. How are you?
Awesome. How are you, man?
Hey, good, man. I was the guy that was just tweeting you a little bit ago, but okay. I had to call in because it's just been a mind-boggling listening to some people calling tonight. I wanted to discuss quick Phillies, but most importantly, I want to talk Eagles. I am just, like I think anybody else would say in Philadelphia, I will forever be in debt to Nick Foles. I think that's fair. It's objective. What he brought to this city was incredible. I just think what a lot of people forget is Nick Foles was put into a phenomenal position because of Carson Wentz. And so what Nick Foles did in the Oakland game, like, that wasn't great. And people often forget of the football off the knee in the Atlanta game. People often forget of the major third down in the Super Bowl where Roddy McLeod makes that tackle when he's the page is trying to hurdle him. Like, there is so much that goes into it. So I can't agree that Nick Foles has us in a better position right now. I think it's fair to say that, you know, Carson hasn't been stellar, but Carson's been way, way better than good. And the scripted plays that are coming out in the first 20 plays of these last games, it dates back to last year, and it's subpar. It is beyond subpar. Okay. And I don't know if it is Doug. I don't know if it's Mike Groh. I don't know the minds that go into that. I don't know if Frank was fully involved in the scripted plays, but I know he had a part. So there is a huge problem there. And I don't know that Dallas wins the game last week. If they go down those drives and put points on the board early in the game, though, the momentum switches. So it switches so much when Dallas Goedert fumbles that ball.
Agree. Mike, you're absolutely right. I'm sorry, man. We're up against it. I'll get your Phillies point next time or else on Twitter. I'm sorry about it, but we're up against it. But you're right. And it's not just Frank Reich, by the way. We'll get to the other thing that I'm not tickled with about the Eagles coaching staff on the other side. 610-632-0975. It's the Joe Torti Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back, Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Hanging out together until 1 a.m. So we've got a little bit more time. Mike tweets back in. Yeah, sorry we got cut off, Mike. He says, just curious of your opinion on the hire of Girardi. I couldn't be happier that they got their guy, but I can't ignore the roster. Still need some important changes to help the team and Girardi to progress. And here's the truth. I think they nailed it. They crushed the hire in terms of the guys that were available. For me, the two guys at the top of my list were Girardi and Madden. So I'm glad that they ended up with one of those guys. He's not going to be the starting pitcher for you, though. Yeah, he's not going to be throwing after Nola. You know what I mean? Like, you do have to find some ways to shore up your arms, because I've got to say, people crush Matt Klentak for not getting starting pitching, and the Dallas Keuchel thing's inexcusable. It really is. It's inexcusable that you didn't at least get a phone call to figure out what that guy wants. But it was not totally off the reservation, let's say, for the Phillies to think that Nick Pivetta and Zach Eflin and Vince Velasquez were going to take steps forward last year. Not completely off the reservation. Based on the way that last year was, you could make the argument that those guys were going to progress, and obviously they didn't. And even Gabe Kapler pointed out how unlikely it was that none of those guys took steps forward to be an everyday starting pitcher, and that all of them would be sent to the bullpen and things like that. But I think that you can't really leave that to chance this year. I'm not talking Gerrit Cole necessarily, because I think that, well, Cole's going to make himself a whole lot of money, and the Phillies should be in if they can be, but you can't blame them for losing on the best guy at the most coveted position in baseball. But they significantly need an upgrade there, for sure. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. So here's the deal with the Michael Bennett trade earlier. The Patriots traded him to Dallas in exchange for a conditional 2021 seventh rounder. That's according to Ian Rappaport. The 11-year veteran gets sent to New England, obviously, after the Eagles. doesn't last a year. He was banned last week by the Patriots following an altercation with a position coach. But even before that, he played 33 defensive snaps in the opener, and he's steadily decreased for a combined total of 23 snaps in his last two appearances. So he was already getting phased out to begin with. One start in six games, 2.5 sacks, and 5 combined tackles. So he told reporters that's up to them when he was asked about on his return from suspension if he wanted to be traded before next Tuesday's deadline. On the flip side, Dallas gets Bennett to go with DeMarcus Lawrence and Robert Quinn and Malik Collins on the inside. All I'm saying is if you're a competitive team and you consider yourself to be a contender, you're making moves and you're trying to evaluate things. I know that Josh Gordon's going to be the popular name. Darius Slay is going to be a popular name. Chris Harris is also going to be one. Although I have to say I'm more lukewarm on Chris Harris than any of the other guys. But or at least than Darius Slay, let's say. But I still don't know if you're the Eagles, if you're you should be investing future assets in this team. Just because at what point, here's the question with the Eagles. At what point do we start believing our eyes? That the play calling is stale, that the performance is not good, the execution is not there, too many mental mistakes, team chemistry, whatever you want to say. It just doesn't seem like this is the one. To me, it does not seem like, of all the teams, this is the one. And Dylan, you're right. Well, Bennett be happy in Dallas when he's kind of a rotational player. Well, he's been a rotational player in Philadelphia. He didn't mind that as much once he got into the lion's share of the rotation.
He wasn't happy early in the year, though.
That's when he was on the bench. You're right about that.
And he wasn't happy in New England because he wasn't getting a lot of snaps.
Which, I mean, the teams are like, dude, you played like 800 snaps here last year in Seattle. We're just trying to keep some tread on these tires. He doesn't want to hear it. So, I don't know. Big disappointing thing for me, the constant in New England is Bill Belichick and how consistently good he is. The games where he gets out coached occur, but they're incredibly rare. Doug Peterson's disappointed me this year. And people don't want to hear it, and it's fine. I don't care. It's an unpopular opinion, but it's mine. You win the Super Bowl, first one in the city's history. Then you write a book about how successful and overcoming adversity you are and everything else. And then they build a statue to you and a quarterback who is currently playing but not for your team while you're currently coaching. That screams of sitting back on your laurels. That screams of being the guy still in his Letterman's jacket when he's 35 years old sitting at the bar talking about how he won state. Like, that is exactly it. If somebody approached me about writing a book, and I'm Doug Peterson, I'd say, let me get back to you in 15 years when I've got a couple more Super Bowls to write about, because my story's not over yet. Somebody wants to put up a statue to me. Can you imagine one other coach in the NFL that would have been like, yeah, that's cool? Like, can you imagine Bill Belichick doing that, or Mike Tomlin, or John Harbaugh? Can you imagine John Harbaugh being like, yeah, let's do the statue thing? With me and Joe Flacco, complacency sets in. It's almost like, you know, in the Rocky movies, what's that song, Eye of the Tiger, where you lose the eye of the tiger? That seems to be what happened, not just with Doug Peterson in general, the whole Eagles team, but Doug Peterson, I think, is certainly emblematic of that problem. Okay, it's time. The often imitated, never duplicated, the one, the only, one more thing. I saw this on Twitter's trending topics. This is a ridiculous survey, but I felt the need to call this to everybody's attention, because oftentimes people see things on the news or read about them on the internet or whatever, and they think, wow, this means something. Let me just show you how ridiculous this is when I see that a Bank of America survey shows that 1 in 6 millennials have pocketed $100,000 or more in savings. Okay? That seems like, you know, and if you're a millennial out there listening, you're thinking, geez, I haven't saved $100,000. Give me one second. In 2017, Bank of America commissioned a survey of 1,500 respondents, which is to say an incredibly small sample size, from the ages of 18 to 71 years. So that means that of like the 30 people that fit into the millennial category, like four of them happen to have $100,000 in savings. So that says that 1 in 6 millennials have pocketed $100,000 or more in savings. So let this be a lesson to you out there. And I'm sure that the stats people out there, they already knew this, but I'm talking to the casuals. I'm talking to the people who see the, huh, that's interesting. I didn't know that if I stopped eating meat, I'd have 100% chance of reducing all of my inflammation numbers and stuff like that. 1,500 people from the ages of 18 to 71 leads to 1 in 6 millennials have pocketed $100,000 in savings. Check the fine print. See who was asked. See how many was asked. How long it was. And if you're talking about clinical trials, I need to know what happened with the control group as well.
It's stupid.
It is stupid. Well said, Dylan McKinnon. Thank you very much to everybody who called and tweeted in. My co-host for the evening, Dylan, outstanding job. Thank you very much for producing as well. I will be back on the airwaves tomorrow. Or will I? I'm getting my days mixed up here. I think I might be off tomorrow. I'm sure that you're all locked in.
You're on the schedule.
I am?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
I'm doing the overlap. I'm doing the overlap show with Devon from 8 to 12. I'll be on with D from 8 to 10. Thank goodness D-Train is there to keep me on the straight and narrow. I will talk to you guys then. Stick around. The Fanatic at 5 is coming up right after this on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.